We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Mitsubishi Sports Open Line.
Munganass St. Louis Honda on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome back inside Enterprise Center, everyone. Plenty more Blues conversation to get into. Heck, some hockey conversation to get into as well. And then whatever we decide to do, because it does get off the rails every once in a while, because this is the fourth period, our extended Blues postgame show as we roll until 11 o'clock this evening. Amy Markscore is back up from the Blues locker room. Chris Kerber with us as well. We got Ryan Schulte in the house, Mike Anderson back in our studios, and taking this one all the way up to the top of the hour, because another exciting victory for the Blues tonight as they keep their home winning ways rolling. And guys, I want to start talking about the fourth line, because I really didn't get to mention it with you, Curbs, when we were in the Mercy postgame breakdown, but I did mention it the next segment. But you pick up a goal from Zach Sanford tonight, you pick up a goal from Ivan Barbashev tonight. That's 13 points in the last three games for this fourth line, and Craig Berube, I think, is one of the most blessed coaches right now when it comes to line combinations, because there are not many teams that can roll four lines consistently and not really be concerned about the ice on time, or the time on ice. Ooh, that was bad.
So look at it this way. Because you got healthy again and got some of your depth back, you missed David Perron for 20 games, you missed Tarasenko for six, you missed Braden Schenn for six. You had this stretch after, well, Perron was gone during that 11-game win streak, but you had that stretch after the 11-game win streak where those other two guys were in and out. You replaced Mackenzie McEachran on the fourth line with Alexander Steen, a 600-point player, 900-game player in the National Hockey League. You replaced McEachran with that guy. Okay? You didn't replace him with another guy up from the minor leagues. You didn't replace him with another rookie trying to figure out how to learn how to win. You replaced him with that guy. And when you listen to Zach Sanford in our post-game interview that we did with him, we asked the question two different ways, and he came back to the same answer both times. And he said, when we come back to the bench and we're listening to Alexander Steen, it's helping us tremendously. And that is why when you have that kind of depth, it can make a difference. And all of a sudden now, whether you're playing a team that's in the bottom of the standings or in the top of the standings, the game of hockey is won in those mismatches and playoff games. The ultimate keys, while your best players have to be your best players, could be how those third and fourth lines chip in. And my goodness, I mean, when you're talking about approaching a 15-goal season now for Ivan Barbashev, Zach Sanford now has points in four straight games, starting to gain some confidence. It's just really huge how it goes, and those mismatches can make all the difference in the world. That's a checking line that teams now have to defend against.
Yeah. And how many times have we seen teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs find success or win a clinching game by having a fourth line player score a goal? It's not your best player. It's not the guy who led the team in goals. It's the Devontae Smith-Pelly guy that's scoring the goal for you late in a period or in overtime, a fourth liner that nobody anticipated scoring, Amy.
You know, I talked to Sanford at length this morning about this fourth line, and particularly Steen joining the fourth line. And as you said, Curbs, he said Steen's talking to us on the bench, and he's talking to us in the locker room. And he's played with Steen on different lines. He's played with Barbashev on different lines at different times. But when these three came together, specifically Steen, he said, we immediately knew our identity. We knew who we were. We knew how to play the game. And having Steen's experience, I think having Steen's confidence in these two younger players has increased their own confidence level in themselves, because you're not having that question of, are we doing the right thing? Am I where I'm supposed to be? You're not necessarily trying to prove yourself. You're trying to play the role, to be the player that the coach is asking you to be, and you have that backed up by a guy as experienced as Alexander Steen. And Zach Sanford's having fun right now. He mentioned when he had the assist on Schwartz's third goal on his hat trick, he said, that was the first time I ever assisted on someone's hat trick. He said it was so much fun. Well, and then he gets it the next night. I said, you must have the magic touch. He goes, I'll tell you what, if a guy's got two goals, he wants me on the ice.
Well, let's go back just over this homestand as that line has really been put together. And take a look at how that line has been used. Now, this comes down to coaching. All right, this comes down to coaching again. And I'm going to go back to Mackenzie McCracken. Now, please understand, when I do this, this is not knocking Mackenzie McCracken. We're talking Mackenzie is a player that is just playing his first stint in the National Hockey League. But I go back over the last five games of Mackenzie McCracken's time. So he played at Buffalo and then didn't play in this homestand. All right, so you go back the previous five games. Let's go back to at San Jose, 7 minutes and 20 seconds. Versus Arizona at home, 8 minutes and 44 seconds. At Pittsburgh, 7:24. At Buffalo, 6:38. Okay? Now, in that same time, when you look at Ivan Barbashev, okay, Barbashev's time at San Jose, 7:57. Then jumped to 13:46. Then to 13:06. Then down to 8:26. Okay? So the problem is when Ivan Barbashev is getting five more minutes than Mackenzie McCracken, those other 5 minutes that might, now some of that could be penalty killing, but if it's even more, if it's even strength, then there's another forward that's on the ice with those guys. You look at their ice time tonight at that fourth line, and Zach Sanford played 11 minutes. Ivan Barbashev, 12:40, and Alexander Steen, 13:03. So you've gotten to the point now where your fourth line isn't even just getting 10 minutes a game. They're getting 13. That's an extra five or six shifts a game. You consider the ice time in the last few games for Barbashev. During his homestand, 12:25, 14:08, 16:40, 16 minutes for the fourth line last game, and then 13 minutes. Alexander Steen. And I mean, and this is, these are just the way the facts work. Alexander Steen, 13, 12, 17, right? And then 12 again today.
Yeah.
And then go look at Sanford. Since in this homestand, 10, 13, 11, and 11. Okay, that's trust. That's getting ice time. And you look, you're not playing 11 minutes a game, 13 minutes a game, 16 minutes a game, head-to-head trying to check the other team's fourth line. Mm-mm. It's not happening.
Yeah.
You've got to be getting ice time against some of the other team's top players.
Yeah, and I talked to Sanford about that, and he mentioned that there were multiple shifts that line was up against the Kucherov line.
Right.
That line was also on the ice after Tampa Bay pulled their goalie. That's trust. Those are big minutes.
Well, and if you think about it, it goes beyond that. I mean, look at every role of the players. Ivan Barbashev is a go-to penalty killer for this team. Alexander Steen's not only a go-to penalty killer for this team, but he's also a guy that's on the ice late in a hockey game. Zach Sanford's a penalty killer that works on it every single practice, whether it's power play or whether it's 5-on-5. He's always out there playing defense. So, I mean, all three of those guys are defensive-minded players that can chip in offensively, and it's the same as an Oscar Sundquist. Craig Berube trusts those players in every situation. And honestly, I feel like pretty much every forward on this roster has that trust from Craig Berube that can play in almost every situation.
Well, he's demanded a certain level of excellence. He's demanded accountability, and they're rewarding it by how they're playing and how they're earning that ice time. Look, if you're not playing well, you're not earning the ice time.
Yeah.
And it's just really that simple. Look, Ivan Barbashev has got offensive ability, guys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, his last year in the Quebec, I mean, here's a kid that came over from Russia, played 4 years in the Quebec League. He had 95 points in the Quebec League. In 57 games, he had 45 goals and 50 assists. In the minor leagues, he had 10 goals 1 year with Chicago, 19 the next year with Chicago, 28 and 37 points. This is his best offensive year because it's been his most consistent year in the National Hockey League. Where those fourth-line guys get the extra ice time, Alexander Steen can get some power play time. He can get some penalty kill time. And you only had to kill one penalty tonight, and your top two penalty killers when it came down to ice time tonight are Alexander Steen and Ivan Barbashev, along with a pairing of Sundquist and O'Reilly.
Yeah.
And so that's how you get it done. Now, when you can get that kind of offense from those lines, and then whether you consider the Sundquist line or the Bozak line your third line, You know, you're getting it there. That's going to open up opportunities. But in the end, to win consistently, and especially in the playoffs, your best players have to be your best players. I know it's as cliche as Taco Tuesday, all right? But you have to have your best players be your best players. And you go back a couple of games ago where that top line wasn't very good, you know, and, you know, that's when the Barbashev, they only played 16 minutes a game. I mean, Ivan Barbashev was within 2 minutes of ice time of Ryan O'Reilly. You talk to Ryan, you know, before that last game, and he's going, well, we have to be better, and they weren't happy with themselves. We have to go out and earn it. And they've elevated their game. So here's your top line that's taken it upon themselves to elevate their game. And I thought Vladimir Tarasenko is not going to show up on the score sheet. And I don't know how the coach is going to break it down. I thought Vladimir Tarasenko really played a hell of a hockey game
tonight. I agree.
And I'm going to go to the play with 2 minutes to go in regulation. They bring the puck over the line. You got a two-goal lead. I don't know why Vegas spent as long as they did to pull their goaltender. Their opportunity to pull their goaltender was 2.5 minutes. When they didn't do it, they lost their chance to maybe get that done sooner. At another time in another place, which sounds more like I'm singing a Neil Diamond song than talking hockey, but Vladimir Tarasenko, even with 2 minutes to go in the game, might have tried to beat that defenseman one-on-one and then take control of the puck going in. He slowed down. He got the blue line. He dumped it down into the corner. And what happened as a result of that is the Blues were able to get fresh bodies on, get offensive zone pressure, and then Vegas was forced to clear it out. The Blues got it back, dumped it in, and 45 seconds was gone on the clock where the Blues hemmed basically the Golden Knights in because of that one play by Vladimir Tarasenko. It's not a play you're going to see on the score sheet. It's not a play that's going to show up in a recap online or in a newspaper article. But that's a play that wins you hockey. And that 45 seconds, that kind of play in Game 3 of a playoff series could be the difference in winning a swing game. Mm-hmm. I absolutely loved that play. And that's a development of a player who at one point in time in his career, even in that scenario where to try to beat somebody one-on-one at the blue line, there's a turnover and maybe numbers coming back the other way.
I think Craig Berube had a lot to do with that turnaround for Vladimir Tarasenko because while Mike Yeo was still here, and I'm not putting it all on the coach, but Vladdy was going through that dry spell where he just couldn't find the back of the net, but he still was playing the other side of the hockey. He was playing the defensive side of the hockey, but it just wasn't turning into goals for him, and the frustration obviously was building. And you know what, Curbs, to transition into the goaltending conversation, but it kind of ties in because when you look at it right now, you're talking about that top line, a Selke candidate with Ryan O'Reilly, who also has a big influence on Vladimir Tarasenko's game. You have Craig Berube, who should be in the conversation for the Jack Adams Award. And then as we just talked about a little bit ago on the postgame show, Jordan Binnington right now in the Calder Trophy conversation. I mean, think back to when the last time you could sit here and talk about three different awards at the end of the regular season and put Blues players in every one of those conversations.
Yeah, you know, and the way these players are stepping up, you see their effects on all the different lines and that trickle-down effect or trickle-up effect, you could say, with the fourth line challenging the top lines. But you talk about a guy for the Selke like Ryan O'Reilly, and you pay attention to how smart he is when the opposition has the puck, his anticipation of the play. We've seen that over and over again. But I feel like I'm also seeing that more and more in the other lines. I mean, we talk about the last game when Robert Thomas scored first to make it 1-0 against Tampa Bay. Vince Dunn with a super smart keep in after Paquette blocks Vince Dunn's shot and he's able to keep the puck in. And then the offsides challenge was made possible because of a super smart stick by Ivan Barbashev to make that play offsides. Then at the end of the game, you're in the final minutes of this game holding on to a lead. You have an empty net on one side. Oscar Sundqvist able to poke the puck away. And you're watching the Blues play this tight hockey where every line seems to be on the same page with this system that they're playing. And you have your top players doing it at an elite caliber. But even the guys that you consider your secondary scorers or your fourth line are also incredibly effective.
Elias Pettersson is going to win the Calder Trophy as the Rookie of the Year. And he should. He really should. When you have an 18-year-old that's putting up 64 points in 65 games, And doing so, averaging 18 minutes a game, and could hit 30 goals. He could have a 30-30 year with the Vancouver Canucks if he gets three goals. He's going to win your Rookie of the Year. The next favored choice to be included in the finalists when you talk to people is Rasmus Dahlin of the Buffalo Sabres. Now, they've tailed off, but as a defenseman and an 18-year-old, he still picked up 40 points this season. And of course, they're basing that all on points. Andreas Johnsson is second overall in rookie scoring, playing with Toronto, and he's got 41 points in 68 games, so not too bad. But when you talk about impact coming up and situation coming up and how that all shakes out, there's no doubt that whether you go Johnsson and Dahlin as the second one to Elias Pettersson, Jordan Binnington has got to be there. Mm-hmm. And as you and I touched on in the first part of the postgame show, people wanted to basically give Carter Hart the Calder Trophy after his second game, the goaltender for the Philadelphia Flyers. Well, Carter Hart's numbers now, after the same number of games played as Jordan Binnington, as they both hit 27. Well, Binnington obviously hitting game play 28 here tonight, yeah, and he started 26 of them. The numbers aren't even close. They're not even close. So, you know, I talked to a couple of writers, because it's obviously it's the writers that vote on that. And, you know, I said, hey, are you starting to hear? And they said, yeah, a little bit. People are starting to ask because, you know, guys talk. And, like, right now, broadcasters vote on Coach of the Year. So I've talked to other broadcasters what they think and how they go. And writers do the same thing. I can't see a reason when I look at rookie scoring and I see a defenseman at 18 years old with 40 points and I see Pettersson at 18 years old with 64 points. I don't see how Jordan Binnington doesn't end up in a top three situation, because especially on the – and I'm going to go back to a lot of the talk about Carter Hart has not come out of the Philadelphia media. We're talking about how it's been discussed when they do NHL overtime, yeah, on NBC Sports Network. I'm talking about how it's discussed when they're breaking things down on, you know, at the desk on NHL Network. Jordan Binnington, hands down to me, I think it's as clear as day, as much as the O'Reilly is a Selke finalist, should be as clear as day,
yep,
that Jordan Binnington should be a finalist for the Calder Trophy. Now, again, I don't think he wins it, nor do I think he really should. I do think that Pettersson should win it with the season he's had, but Binnington, without a doubt, is a finalist.
Let me ask you this, because maybe I'm diving too deep into this, which is very possible, but when it comes to it, yes, Pettersson is a very, very rare talented player, but you also take into consideration who he's playing with, a Brock Besser, the same with Rasmus Dahlin. But Binnington is kind of out there solo, because when he jumped into the net, the team wasn't playing their style of hockey that they're playing now, and this guy kind of saved the season.
Oh, not kind of. 100%
yes,
did.
So,
save the season.
So is that partial? Could that be part of the thinking process of it, of where, yes, these guys are playing great, but it's also Pettersson's playing with a Brock Besser, who's a top 10 overall pick.
Well, but I don't – I think
– Is that
think,
too much?
No, I think it's an argument in sports, guys. We can broaden it out. I think it's an argument in sports that is just unfair and doesn't make sense.
Right.
I think people argue that if they want to find a reason why a coach shouldn't be considered a great coach or something, they're going to say, well, he had good players. I mean, it happens.
It's true.
Okay? I mean, Spoelstra won championships with the Miami Heat, right? Okay? But they always want to say, well, look at the players he had.
Right. Okay? Even Greg Popovich San Antonio.
Well, look at – yeah, sure. And you know, and – Pat Riley and
Tony La Russa,
Phil Jackson, Tony La Russa. You can go in all, yeah, the different sports. Okay, I mean, very rarely is anybody going to win a championship with bad players. So I don't penalize. I don't think you penalize a coach. I don't think you penalize a player for who they played with.
Right.
Barrett Jackman
won the Calder.
Played that year with Al MacInnis.
Yep.
Okay, but he won the Calder and he earned it. You still had to perform.
Yeah.
You still had to play. You know, you still the year that Chris Pronger won the Hart and won the Norris, Todd Reirden was his defense partner. Okay? Well, you still had to play well to be with that guy. And yes, okay, you are with that guy. I get it. I don't take anything away, because Pettersson still has to score. Pettersson,
right,
still has to get it done. I think what happens in this case is you're absolutely right. I think the pressure of the goaltending, how he's done it, how he's handled himself, that should be all part of it. But the reality of it is they're also going to look at it and say, well, he wasn't here all year.
Right.
And that's actually, if there's anything in my opinion that is going to keep Craig Berube from being a finalist for the Jack Adams Trophy,
it's that.
It's going to be that.
Yeah.
In my opinion, and I have a vote for the Jack Adams Trophy. The final votes are not due till the end of the year. You can vote for the coach of the team. My three finalists as they sit right now. I'll tell people the way I'm thinking now. And I would put them in this order. Would be John Cooper 1, Craig Berube 2, Barry Trotz 3.
Wow.
Okay. That's the way my vote would go right now. So naturally somebody's going to ask, well, why not Rick Tocchet? I mean, if Arizona were to make the playoffs, considering the injuries and how they did it, Rick Tocchet would have been something. It's a hell of a coaching job.
Yeah.
A great coaching job. Okay. But they would have just gotten to just into the playoffs as a wild card.
Yeah.
There's a chance Craig Berube got his team to top three in the division, maybe even second in home ice.
Maybe
that
even
puts
first.
A difference. Okay. And well, yeah, heck yeah, maybe even first. The other argument, though, when I've talked to the broadcasters, have made is, okay, well, you know, Craig Berube came in after 20 games, wasn't here the whole year. And they're going to play that card of, well, can you give it to a guy that wasn't there the whole year? Oh, hell yeah, when you turn the season around like this. Now, the other thing that tends to go for and play, and I don't know how you guys feel on this one, but for me, this is why John Cooper, to me, wins Coach of the Year, especially if they finish. They haven't just edged the competition. They have destroyed the competition. Mm-hmm.
There is no competition.
Okay? And then someone's going to look at me and say, well, yeah, but look at the team he has. It's not the coach's fault. You still had to coach it.
I'd say that's even tougher.
You have had coaches that can't coach top talent teams. All right? I mean, so I don't take it away from Bill Torrey or Joe Torrey that he had the championship caliber teams that he had in New York with the Yankees. Sometimes you try to motivate that team to play and continue to roll the competition away Tampa has, it's not easy. And sometimes I do think a coach of the year or a coach should be rewarded or awarded or recognized for actually meeting expectations. Look, somebody could say Tampa's going to be good. They should have competed for a President's Trophy. Hell yeah, they should have. But they ran away with the doggone thing.
Yeah.
You know, like annihilated everybody. So that I think that, and now the flip side is when it comes to expectations too, sometimes Coach of the Year type stuff is awarded somebody where they exceeded expectations. Well, whose expectations?
Right.
Ours or theirs?
Right.
You know, and that's also part of the argument.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what's so interesting because this Blues team touches on both of those aspects because you're right. Sometimes it feels like the Jack Adams Award is a trophy for congratulations, you did much better than everybody thought you would. But when you
you weren't as bad as we expected you to be.
Hey,
you
way to go.
Right.
But when you look at this Blues team, right, we're saying, well, John Cooper had he has a great roster. Of course they were going to win. That's how we went into this season with this Blues team,
yep.
That they had a great roster that was supposed to win. So you have a team that was expected to win, that didn't win, fell to the bottom of the standings, and then a coach who brought them back up to what they were initially expected to be.
What if Craig, let's play this scenario out. What if Craig Berube was a head coach on day one and the same exact season happened? You struggled. They rebounded. They came back. In other words, you don't fire the coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the same exact season happens, but he was the head coach from the beginning of the year. Does it change whether or not you would make him a finalist?
I think it does. Because I think people are looking at it, and they're always going to sit there and say, well, you can't forget about the first part of the season. Maybe they put more of the onus on the players.
It's a fair argument. I've got to be honest with you. It's a fair argument to listen to.
I think if that were to happen, then the people would be talking about how, well, the players must have taken over and ran with this rather than the coach. Because when you put a new coach in the situation, I think that's when you look at it and say, oh, well, he turned this season around. You know, like,
let me throw this at you. Look, I was curious this morning because – you know, sometimes you go through these things and then you go, I think there's a trend or I think there's something. You look it up and you go, oh, no, there wasn't. I was really wrong. Or you go, oh, yeah, there was. Okay. I'm going to go back to when Andy Murray replaced Mike Kitchen.
Wow. Okay. We're going way back.
Right. In 06-07, when Andy Murray replaced Mike Kitchen, Andy Murray came in and took that same team. Okay. And again, they didn't make the playoffs, but Andy Murray ended up taking that team and they finished with a record under Andy Murray. Andy Murray's record that first year he took over during the season was 27-18-9. Okay. Here we go. I'm not counting that third column, folks. So I'm going to say that's nine games over 500. Okay? All right? So then Davis Payne takes over for Andy Murray. All right? And when Davis Payne took over for Andy Murray, Davis Payne finished the 2009-2010 season, and he turned the team around, and they finished eight games over at 23-15-4. Davis Payne quickly comes back to earth a little bit over a couple quick seasons, and here comes Ken Hitchcock. So Ken Hitchcock replaces Davis Payne. It was right around that Thanksgiving time, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or early November, somewhere in there. And Hitchcock in that 11-12 season put a record the rest of the season of 43-15-11.
It's more incredible than this.
Does that sound familiar? And then here comes Mike Yeo.
Didn't he win the Jack Adams that year? Or was it the next year for Hitch?
Might have been the next year. I got to look that one back up. But then Mike Yeo replaces Ken Hitchcock.
Yep.
And what was Mike Yeo's record when he took over in 16-17? 22-8-2 is what the Blues finished that year. Every one of those coaches, just because of a change of message and how they did things, drastically turned things around. So here it is, Craig Berube now has a record of 34-18-5.
Hitchcock won the Jack Adams that year when he took over. When he took over for Payne.
All right, so there you have it, where a head coach won it, taking over in the middle of the season, and Craig Berube has now had his team put together a record of 34-18-5. He could end up with home ice. But it's not all that unusual, at least the way the coaches' tree has gone for the St. Louis Blues, to have those replacement coaches really come out of the gate with a hell of a record.
Well, as we head to our break, Mike Anderson sending us this text. Scotty Bowman won two Coach of the Year awards. The 77 Canadiens had 132 points, and the 96 Wings had 131 points. And Anderson said, can you imagine if he was punished because he had a good roster and he never won?
That's why John Cooper, to me, is the top ballot for Coach of the Year, because they would have had to win out to break one, but they're not just pushing. And I know I get it that the errors are different, that you have shootout wins, and that does play a part in it. But I will throw this at you too. When Montreal was setting that record, I don't know that every team you were playing was competitively as balanced as we have right now. So I don't know how you make up for that difference when you're talking about a team that let's say they get eight shootout wins, you know, so that's 16 more points. How do you take away from that based on the level of overall competition? You know what I'm saying? So I don't know how you do that. That will be for a debate that nobody could win. It's just who wants to argue louder.
Yeah, that's the GOAT debate.
But you are still within the rules that you are asked to play, within the schedule that you've been given to play. You are pushing some all-time records.
Well, we got to take a quick break on the fourth period, and I want to change the topics because someone has finally hit Festivus, and we are what, end of March? Someone's airing their grievances as the regular season wraps up. The rivalry and the hatred is back, folks.
Oh, that's awesome.
We're going to get into it next on the fourth period on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Mitsubishi Sports Open Line.
Munganass pre-owned on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome back into the fourth period. Chris Kerber, Amy Mark scores. Alex Ferrario hanging out with you until 11 o'clock. Blues defeat Tampa Bay. Well, that was Saturday. What am I doing? Blues defeat Vegas this evening, 3-20. I guess I'm just still holding on to that Tampa Bay victory on Saturday because it was so much fun.
You know what you could have done? You could have said, if the Blues defeat Tampa Bay, then you pause and go, earlier in the week, but tonight.
I know, right? Well, I was so excited to get into this next topic because anytime you get someone airing their grievances in professional sports, boy, everyone runs with it. But this one was gold, guys, as Drew Doughty of the LA Kings says they will officially wrap up the year. Well, I guess not officially, but they are going to wrap up the year possibly as one of the bottom teams in the National Hockey League, but they will be the bottom team in the Western Conference. And they were playing the Calgary Flames this evening. And we all remember the rivalry that was created between Doughty and Matthew Tkachuk in Tkachuk's career. And Drew Doughty, Amy, he teed off on him this afternoon. This was his comment. No respect for him. None. I respect everyone else. I'll never talk to him off the ice. He's not respected by most of the people in the league. It's not just me. That's just a fact.
Ouch.
Dang! Dang!
You can always count on Drew Doughty on some controversial takes. I know when the whole Erik Karlsson drama was going down, he was talking about his contract and talking about Karlsson's. And yes, Doughty, not the biggest fan of Matthew Tkachuk.
R-E-S-P-C-T. What does it mean to me?
Matthew showed him no quarter his rookie year. He went at him, and I loved every bit of it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this. I think I put a tweet out there. I think I replied to Roger Millions, who is a retired broadcaster up in Canada, and I said, I'll take them both on my team, and I want to see them together in the same lineup. You know, and he said, why don't you just get McDavid as a centerman? I go, I'll take that too. But, you know, look, we need some villains, guys. We need some bad blood.
It goes back
to
need
some nastiness.
It goes back to the John Tortorella comment about how there's no hate in the NHL anymore.
We need a little wakey-wakey.
Oh, yeah.
But then what we really needed is not 4 years of nobody hitting Seabrook and Keith. We needed somebody going after Seabrook and Keith and making them fight and do something and creating that bad blood. We need some of that nastiness. John Tortorella was here in St. Louis when he was asked about that earlier this season.
Yep.
He says, I got to go into my guys and say, do me a favor, please try to dislike these guys. You know, they're trying to beat you. Man, we need some bad blood. Look, I mean, you know, when you're getting in the, you know, late 90s and early 2000s, and I don't care when it was, whether it was a Monday night or a Saturday night, if Detroit was playing Colorado mm-hmm. because of the cheap hit from Lemieux on Draper and the nastiness, it was must-see TV.
Yep.
You know, you have to have that stuff. You've got to have the bad blood. And, man, oh, man, we need some more guys chirping. We need some nastiness. And then we've got to see it just metastasize into ugliness that's fun for all of us to watch.
You know, I don't know that there was more hate than there was in that Detroit-Colorado rivalry of yep. the 90s. I talked to Michael Delzato about this, and he said he was a big fan of the old rivalries and that the true hate that was between the players. He said, now a lot of us are friends, we all know each other, and it doesn't – you can have rivalries, but it doesn't escalate to the intense – hatred that they had.
Who do you hate on the Blackhawks?
From the 90s.
Seabrook's number one.
Seabrook's number
two.
One as a fan.
Kane's number
and yet,
two.
And yet after that, like, no one's even touched him.
No.
I mean.
Well, other than
Even the captain, David Backes. Now, well, Pat Maroon hit him.
Pat Maroon
and then Barbashev fought him.
Yeah.
And did you hear the crowd go?
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
So he's kind of public enemy. All right. People boo Patrick Kane, but there's never really been any, although it was fun to watch Barrett Jackman be nasty on him. All right. Okay. Minnesota. Who do you hate?
Well, Jamie Benn.
That's
Minnesota.
Oh, sorry.
We'll get to Dallas.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
We're saving that one there. Right?
But thank Minnesota, you, sorry.
Boy, right?
Like, is there true?
Zucker, I think I hate.
Right.
Zucker, but you,
there's no one
I
you hate on Minnesota.
What did he do
you don't
other
hate
than
him.
Just skates
he's just
around
good.
The ice, okay? Yeah. You go through the lineup. Winnipeg. Has anybody done anything to go, God, I hate that player?
I think only with Buffalo.
Dustin Byfuglien,
yeah.
But
okay,
it's nothing personal.
Because of the Chicago thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's...
Okay. Dallas?
Dallas is Jamie Benn.
Jamie Benn.
Okay. Sitting on Alex Petrangelo.
But why, right. But here it is. Okay. Ironically, you had Seabrook and Keith that hit David back as your captain. You had Jamie Benn sit on your captain, and the captains themselves aren't responding in those situations.
Right.
You know? Man, you want to see some nastiness. Now, the hope is that nastiness gets created because of the rivalries in the playoffs, and that's where it's got to go. But doggone it, then you got to see it carry over into the regular season.
Yep.
Well, and I do think, unfortunately, Alex and Amy, that one of the reasons is because every team values these points so tight because the competition is that tough that it's almost not allowed to get to that point
right.
anymore.
And if I'm Matthew Tkachuk, I won. I did exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
I did X exactly. I'm calling my dad afterwards saying, Dad, I finally did it.
You
got
just
these
ordered
guys.
Up your favorite omelet
yes.
right in between his ears.
Oh, yes. You own Drew Doughty for the rest of the season, but maybe for the rest of his career because of that.
Now in the playoffs, the Blues would have to meet the Capitals in the Stanley Cup final, but do you think that Tom Wilson hate would carry over?
Not yet.
I don't think so.
But,
I think if they were a Western Conference
listen,
team.
But I do want to see a playoff series between Calgary and
San Jose?
And Nolan in L.A.
Oh.
I want to see those two go together for seven games.
That may not be happening for a while record L.A.'s doing.
But, well, L.A. had 99 points a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, then they went back down. They could bounce back. But, I mean, but that's what you want to see. You want to see that nastiness? And we'll have to get into it later in the week. But Drew Doughty then took on Brent Burns and said everyone wants to say he's a Norris Trophy candidate. Watch how many times a game he gets burned.
Well, not just him. Not just him. Erik Karlsson.
Erik Karlsson and P.K. Subban should not have won the Norris Trophy when they did. Neither one of them were very good defenders, so while they picked up a lot of points, neither one of them, when they won the Norris Trophy, were even part of their penalty-killing units.
Tell you
so
what,
that's my argument on that one.
I tell you what, we're going to have to get into this on Chili's Week in Hockey tomorrow night, so maybe we'll have you pop on with us, Curbs, okay, and get into it a little bit. 8 to 10 tomorrow night. Guys, as always, a great fourth period, fun hockey talk, and we'll get back in it on Friday against the New York Rangers. Hey, a big thank you to Ryan Schulte as well, and of course, Mike Anderson back in our studios, and that is going to do it for us tonight here from Enterprise Center. Again, the Blues beat Vegas 3-1, Blues and Rangers on Friday. Chili's Week in Hockey comes your way tomorrow night from 8 to 10 o'clock. Have a great night, everyone. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.